you've got them outside the window too. So nice.
You're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Molawa'a, K284AL Hale'iva. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Robin and Paul, and on today's show, we will get vegetative with our propagation, jump on a life raft of new kale varieties, and discover the effectiveness of rooting hormones. But first, we would like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with our fine sponsors.
Aloha, Robin.
Aloha, Paul.
It's great to see you.
It's great to be here.
It's great to be talking about gardening, farming, plants, our passion for it, our love for these crazy leafy creatures that just bring us so much joy.
And we sure hope that you can feel it out there listening.
I'm sure many of our listeners do, and we're excited to share some of our research, our investigations, our personal experience with you today in relation to vegetative propagation and wild tropical plants. So we're going to get started with our celestial session, tuning in for inspiration with the heavenly bodies above that influence our planting, harvesting, and other gardening and farming activities. We are truly not alone, and we are one with the universe. And this is most easily seen by getting your hands in the soil. We'll start with today's Hawaiian moon phase, and we want to give thanks to the 2015 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, which comes from Hanalei Watershed Hui and many others, and also to the U.S. Naval Observatory for our times. If you want to get a printed copy of the calendar, they're still available from Maka'ala at the Hanalei Watershed Hui office, 826-1985. Today's Hawaiian moon is Ole Ku Kahi. And Ole Ku Kahi rose over Kauai at 11:11 a.m. this morning. That's got to be a lucky moon. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 6:23 p.m. tonight, and will set at 1:37 a.m. tomorrow. Half of the moon, 50% of the moon's beautiful face, is illuminated. And, of course, that means that it is first quarter moon today at 12:14 p.m. And it's also getting dark tonight at 6:23 p.m. for those who want to spend every last minute in the garden. And excitingly, I'm happy to say that's 7 minutes later than last week at the same time. So extra minutes of sunlight coming to us in big measures now.
Yeah, and it'll get bigger and bigger as it goes up until June 21st here.
Yes.
It's pretty cool to behold.
Yes, indeed.
I know I'm going to appreciate those extra minutes in the garden.
Yes, indeed. So from the biodynamic look at things, where are we at this week?
Right? Well, right now we are in excellent, we're looking great for doing some vegetative propagation this week. Today and tomorrow, the moon's in Taurus, an earth sign, making it a good time to work with our root plants. So again, we discussed this, it could be a good time to thin your root plantings. But Friday and Saturday, with the moon in Gemini, just before the moon goes into its descending phase, that's the air sign of Gemini, making it a perfect time to do cuttings.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll discuss a little bit later in the show what to look for in your mother stock plants when you're going to take cuttings for this kind of activity. And Sunday through Tuesday, the moon will move into Cancer, a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leaf plants. And at that point, we have entered the descending moon. So we will be getting to do some planting.
Yes.
Planting of our leafy green vegetables. I know how much we all love our leafies, and so this is going to be a great time to get some spring plants in.
Sounds great. And Robin was giving me lots of space to finish up on the Hawaiian moon, so I will let you know, because I didn't put the recommendations in.
Yes.
So thank you. You could sense that something wasn't quite complete.
It's true.
So Ole Ku Kahi She's the first of four Ole moons in the first week of the Hawaiian moon month. And according to Native Planters of Old Hawaii, one of our fine resource books from the ancient times, it said that tides run high and the sea is rough. Fishing is poor. It's not recommended for planting or fishing, for ole means nothing, without, or non-productive. However, it is recommended for weeding. And I'm not sure that there really are indications of how much compost making were done in ancient Hawaii, but no doubt it was done. And this would also certainly be a good activity for today.
Sure, yeah. No fishing, no planting. What else are you going to do? Some weeding, some compost making, maybe a little nap.
Yep. Sounds really good. So we have some very interesting notable news that Robin has been developing for us this season.
Yes. I have some notable news about winter boar kale. For those of you who like to grow that particular variety of curly kale, you'll have noticed that last year there was a seed crop failure for 2014, so there was no seeds available. And sadly to say, there was yet a second seed crop failure for 2015. So we've learned that no winter boar kale seeds will be available again in 2015. And winter boar is definitely the kale of choice as it stands up to long-term harvest, multiple harvests, better than any variety, hands down.
So if our listeners are getting beautiful kale, curly kale at the farmer's market, for instance, it's almost certainly been winter boar?
I'd say almost certainly been winter boar. And it stands high enough off the ground that it doesn't get any splashback. It's just really a stellar variety. And I found out from excellent customer service from Johnny's Selected Seed. You'll remember we talked with Lainey Curtez last month when we were talking about seeds, and we did get a little update from her. At that time on winter boar, they were hopeful they'd be able to sell it, but it is not available. And she gave me a call with some replacement varieties. I learned that any of the boar kales, so winter boar, star boar, or rip boar, are all bred by the same Dutch seed company called Bejo. That's Bejo. com. If you want to go check out their website, I highly recommend it. They're top-notch facility. They're non-GMO. And they had just, unfortunately, perfect conditions for black rot in their fields 2 years in a row. And so this year's seed crop of winter boar was infected and was unable to be treated. If you'll remember, we spoke about black rot maybe a year ago with Dr. Scott Nelson, the plant pathologist from UH over there in Oahu.
And this is a seed-borne illness, or it can be passed from seed, this disease. Yet my understanding was that it could be killed with a hot water treatment.
That's right. However, the hot water treatment didn't do the trick. Johnny's, in particular, I don't know every seed company's policy, but they have a zero tolerance policy for black rot, which certainly is of value to us here, as often our conditions of humidity can be pretty prime for black rot. And I know black rot has affected some of our farmers here in the Hawaiian Islands, and certainly wouldn't want to be importing that and starting our crop out with that. Right. So thanks to Lainey, she said that Bejo has worked on some other kales. Of course, there's star boar and rip boar. There's also one called Premier, and there's another one called Darky Boar, which is kind of a funny name, but sounds like the most comparable to winter boar, as it's has one of the same parent lines as winter boar. And the difference is that the leaves are going to be a little bit darker green. Doesn't sound bad to me, certainly. But just want to let you know that I'll be trialing some of these different varieties in the early part of the year as I'm still sitting on a little bit of winter boar seed. But I want to give them a try. It's just this whole thing really makes me think about how risky it is to be growing hybrids. You know, I mean, when that seed fails or something goes wrong and you've based a lot of your growing on it, it really puts you in this position of what to do. And so I think a really great advertisement for open pollinated kales. And certainly I'm going to try these and see how they do. But I just kind of want to put the word out there to the growers listening that you might want to take extra good care of your winter boar plants this year because they're kind of a limited edition. And if the leaves start to get small, the plants start to look a little weak, it's usually simply a matter of feeding them. And, you know, if you get some rot on them, that's another thing altogether. But we're going to talk about vegetative propagation in a little while here. And I know One Song's had some pretty good luck ground layering kales to be able to propagate them vegetatively. So you might want to give that a try. But apart from taking excellent care of the winter boar plants that you have now so they can last throughout the year and hopefully we'll have some more winter boar seed, we can try some new greens. Yeah. You know, Johnny said they're going to make a bumper sticker that collards are the new kale. So we are all given the invitation through this unfortunate seed crop failure to give some new greens a try and care better for the plants that we already have growing in our garden.
And I think the message, too, to the consumers of the leafy greens is not to get too particular. It's funny because when we're kids, oftentimes when we're children, we have a hard time just eating greens at all. But sometimes the adult can be very specific to the kind of greens that they're willing to eat. And it's really a good idea to expand your palate and try some new things. You may need to prepare those collards. You may need to cook them a little bit longer. You may need to be more selective about which leaves you're getting so they're tender enough. I want to encourage people to be looking at the Kailan more and trying the ones that are, although Kailan is often harvested for the young flower shoots, the leaves can be incredibly succulent and delicious too. So, and that's one that we can save seed from here in Hawaii, unlike the curly kale.
That's right. It's the massaged kale salad, I believe, is it's the fascination. We all love it so very much. And it's true, the curly kale definitely performs best in that kind of
environment,
yes.
If you will.
Yes.
It holds the dressing
in that preparation,
real well.
Yeah. It does. And I see why farmers enjoy the winter boar, because those multiple harvests make each plant, you know, a very profitable plant for us. So in the backyard garden, we have a little more chance to play around and try some different things. And at any rate, get a little fertilizer on those kales if they're looking small, because there'll be different varieties coming down the pike this year.
And we'll be sending a plethora of different greens varieties out at the Seed and Plant Exchange coming up next month on March 22nd. So for your opportunity to try maybe a number of different kinds of leafy greens that you haven't tried in your garden yet, come on out. It's going to be at a Ninaho Community Park, home of the Namahana Farmers Market on Saturday, as well as Kauai Mini Golf. And noon to 5, and it's going to be, you folks have heard about the Seed and Plant Exchange, or you've been several times. I really feel like this could be the best one yet. And
well, as I agree with you, Paul, and that largely depends on the participation we get. So if you're listening out there, start looking around, see what kind of seeds you can gather up that you'd like to bring that you think would be of value to the community. If there's something you really enjoy growing, maybe get a little extra seed to bring out and put on the seed table to share with our community.
And in fact, if you start some leafy greens or other fast-growing starts today or in the next couple of days, they'll be big enough to share at the Seed and Plant Exchange as well.
Excellent. Well, there we have it. With the moon in Cancer on Sunday through Tuesday, we've got perfect opportunity to do that.
Righteous.
Very good. Well, now let's take a stroll through the farmer's market. And what I've been noticing that's out there right now is the well-loved and odorous durian.
Yes. Maligned by some and worshipped by others.
That's right. I think it's a misunderstood fruit myself. It's the formidable thorn-covered husk. and the very interesting and unique fragrance that emits from the fruit. It's somewhere in the jackfruit family, I'm thinking, based on how it grows. They're usually somewhere from a little larger than a softball to twice the size of a softball. And they're native to Indonesia and Malaysia, although there are a number of growers who grow them here in Kauai. They're certainly only at market for a very limited time. There's usually not a lot of them. So if you walk by the vendor and you see it, stop and go back and get it right away, because by the time you lap around the market, chances are it will already be gone. And we eat the flesh or the pulp that's around the seeds, as in jackfruit, although sometimes jackfruit seeds are cooked up. Generally, durian seeds are not eaten. Great thing to plant. Certainly the most interesting sprout I've ever seen in my life, if you've ever germinated one. And durians are high in vitamin C, B complex vitamins, and minerals like potassium in particular. In fact, that whole Artocarpus family is high in potassium generally. That's jackfruits and breadfruits. They're known for their high levels of potassium, good for our heart. And it's interestingly, durian has high levels of tryptophan. Tryptophan is the amino acid that's in high levels in turkey. It's why people like to take a nap after eating a big turkey dinner, like on Thanksgiving. And tryptophan in our body metabolizes into both serotonin and melatonin. Serotonin being the happy hormone, it's what gives us good feelings. Melatonin helps us sleep. So that's an interesting thing for a fruit to have. If you are seeing them at market, see one at market and you're thinking about getting it, you want to look for a firm stalk at the top. That's going to tell you that it's fresh. And you can let ripen to your taste. Some people like it a little less ripe. Some people like it very soft. Certainly, the smell is a factor. You may just be tired of smelling it in your kitchen and decide that it's time to eat it. But personally, I think it's delicious and rare and spectacular. And I'd recommend giving one a try and not listening to what other people say about it. Even me.
Well, except the people who love it or, yeah. Go with a clear conscience, I suppose. It took me quite a while to fall in love with this plant. That actually, I was searching my notes, and it is in the hibiscus family, which I think is a family that has gotten larger as the botanists move, maybe have eliminated a great number of families and submerged them into more traditional or well-established families.
Oh, interesting. So I stand corrected. It's not in the Artocarpus clan.
No. And in fact, it is another interesting and plant you wouldn't think has been put into hibiscus is the cacao tree. So it's actually related to chocolate, and so which also has serotonin enhancing qualities. Whether or not it's got them inside, I'm not sure. But I had the pleasure of visiting a durian farm in Thailand when I was there a couple of years ago. And this was a more of a preservation farm because they had over 50 varieties of durian. And the man who runs the farm took it on from his father's. It was his father's labor of love, and now he tends the place. Sadly, the seeds that I brought back, recalcitrant seeds that need to be germinated immediately and can't be saved, only represented the seeds that had not germinated at the farm. And so, because I couldn't bring back seeds that were in the process of germinating, so it represented the weakest seeds, essentially, because out of the whole batch. And so, unfortunately, because he didn't have any ripe fruit at the time to sample, which was a bit of a sad thing after making the many-hour trek to see the farm.
Sure.
But we on Kauai are fortunate that there are durian lovers here who are planting more and more durian. And shout out to our buddy Zachary, who's been putting many durian in the ground, and other people who share his love. Just thank you guys for at least setting up the next generation to have many durian so we don't have to be fighting over them at the farmer's market. And yeah, be careful. If you do decide to take one home, be careful. This plant could inflict some serious wounds with its incredible triangular spines that at first would perhaps scare you away, but the aroma is intoxicating.
Yeah, the first time I had one was in Thailand, actually, and I knew what it was, but had never eaten one and just instantly bought it from the vendor, and they wrapped it in newspaper before they could put it in the plastic shopping bag, because it literally would just shred the shopping bag if you put it in there without covering those spikes. And we hung on to it. It started smelling. The people at the hotel were like, yeah, what's with the durian? And we went on a longboat ride and brought it with us. And the two captains of our longboat, they took one whiff and they asked us if we had a durian. And we said, yes. Oh. And they said, can we eat it with you? And I said, great. They knew exactly how to get into it, which I would not have known how to do. So we got to share it with a couple of Thai guys, and it was just fantastic.
And at the moment you admitted you had it, were you thinking they might just be throwing you off into the water?
I did. I thought
they were
going to tell me.
It's either you or the durian that goes.
Yeah. So they took a really sharp knife and started scoring this peel, and they knew exactly where the sections inside were from experience, of course,
yes,
which is not something that a newcomer to the durian knows. And they just sort of popped out these sections, and then we ate this delicious, creamy, colored flesh.
Delightful.
Yeah. Anyway, pretty excited to see them at the market on Kauai.
A great reason to go out to your local farmer's market soon. Yes. So this is In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Robin and Paul. We're here until 1 o'clock, and we are going to move on now to our feature for this month. We're focusing in on propagation. We've covered seeds. We're getting into vegetative propagation. Last week we dipped into micropropagation, which is certainly a subset of the vegetative propagation and perhaps the most advanced. We're going to get back to the basics today with some vegetative propagation that you can do right in your own backyard, your home. Certainly the more traditional vegetative propagation, hugely commercially important. And we're going to start right now by focusing in on why we would choose to use this particular propagation method.
That's right. And sometimes it's as simple as there are no seeds produced by the plant. And so there would be no way to plant a seed, although seeds are the most economical way to start new plants. Sometimes the plant just doesn't produce a seed for us to plant.
The next reason would be because we want to actually have a clone of the parent that is identical in every fashion, that it preserves identically the qualities that we desire. And that is often, it's one example of what we refer to as true to type. So many of our tropical fruit trees, for instance, if we grow it from seed, even if it does produce a viable seed, the resulting fruit from that next generation will not be similar to the preferred variety of that particular fruit. And we'll get into some of the details about that when we get down to our grafting and our other methods. Another reason would be for the reduction in time to bearing. So for a plant that's grown from seed, it has to go through a juvenile stage. In many cases, it's just putting on a lot of vegetative growth and woody growth in some cases before it gets to the stage where it can flower and fruit.
Correct.
And so if we can bypass that juvenile stage and get right to the point where it's getting ready to produce either the flowers or the fruits that we desire, it can cut the production time often in half from the time that we take our vegetative propagation method forward. And this can be a huge boon for the backyard gardener or somebody who's planting out 100 acres of something. It can make a gigantic difference, of course, from a commercial standpoint.
Of course.
So those are some of the major reasons that we do it. We're going to cover some major sections or major types of vegetative propagation today. So we'll just list them out for you right now at the top. We'll talk first about divisions and separations. Those would be the easiest ones to do. Then we'll move on to cuttings. We'll cover layers. Oftentimes people have heard, even if they don't know what it really is, about an air layer, or ground layers are also done. So we'll cover those. And we'll finish up with grafting. So this is obviously a huge topic that could take up many shows. And in the future and the past garden shows, we'll have authorities or people who are skillful at any one of these particular propagation methods. Today we're just doing a general overview of the different methods, as well as give you examples of particular species or varieties that you would utilize with those particular methods.
Right. So we'll start.
So we'll start out with divisions and separations.
Right. And a couple plants that come to mind right away for me are ginger, be it avapui or your culinary ginger or other flowering gingers, and irises. Irises, to me, they just say divisions when you look at the root. It's really obvious where they want to come apart. And I suppose we could lump taro into the divisions section too, correct?
We can, although I've read recently that technically that would actually be called a separation rather than a division. And separations defined as when the parts naturally separate. In fact, that is the strategy of the plant, is for those pieces to naturally separate. Mm-hmm. Whereas I would use the example of a lemongrass or a vetiver clump as one where nature doesn't separate that clump to spread its seed, essentially, its vegetative seed.
Sure.
But essentially, we can go in with a shovel and break apart clumps like that to make many small plants that will grow into a full-size plant.
That's right. And they're individualized. When you said lemongrass, I thought of how when I've dug them up, there are just little pieces that you can see. They're asking to be individualized.
Right. Whereas actually vetiver is more of a clump that you really have to chop at, like it's a machete job or a very sharp shovel. Other plants that would fall in with this would be Olenna turmeric, bunching onions, strawberries use a method of division, yacón, the Bolivian sunroot, which Robin says she's been getting ready for the seed and plant exchange as well, comfrey, bananas, and horseradish. Mm-hmm. As well as the irises and the lemongrass we talked about before. So these are really kind of the easiest way to get started, and yet there still is a timing aspect.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm really grateful to be receiving Awapuhi, the shampoo ginger, from Robin. And Robin, you've been waiting for the right time to do it. Can you tell us about that?
That's right. I have been waiting for the plant's senescence or dormant time, mm-hmm. so that flowered out for me beautifully in the late last year. Now I see the leaves starting to die back, and it won't be long until they reshoot again. So it's really just in that narrow window when the plant's foliage has died back and it's just about to send out new leaf buds. Mm. That's the prime time to go in there, dig up your clump. It can get quite thick. So I'm basically, it's almost a function of keeping my garden neat as well, mm-hmm. is to bring it back into a reasonable spot. So I'll be cutting off some of those. And then whenever you cut gingers or turmerics and a lot of other plants, actually, you want them to heal. You want that cut where they've been separated from one another to callus over or heal itself a little bit. Mm-hmm. If it goes right into some wet soil there is a potential that the root could start to rot.
Right.
So with avapui, we're basically looking at what I'd call early spring. Mm-hmm. Can we call this early spring?
Sure.
I think we can.
Although it feels like summer this year around, doesn't it?
Yeah, no doubt.
Beautiful crisp days, though. And interesting that with this timing, if people are familiar with awapuhi, either from their own plantings or from the forest, that when it goes into this dormant phase, they actually come up and you can actually see them near the surface of the soil. So interesting that the plant, while it's not producing via seed, it's not spreading via seed, but that when its rhizome pieces have the greatest amount of reserves to resprout again, they're kind of coming out of the soil where either an animal might move it or perhaps a flood might break off pieces.
Sure.
So the intelligence of the plant in terms of dispersing itself, and it's just beautiful timing.
Sure. Even when it doesn't have a true seed, it shows off its seed that it does have.
Indeed.
Yeah. Excellent.
So we'll move on now to cuttings. And cuttings would be the next perhaps easiest one to do. And what we're really looking at doing here is creating adventitious rooting of a stem after it's separated from the parent plant. So adventitious roots, we can see sometimes with plants that are still rooted in the ground. And these would be roots that come out from above the soil level, somewhere on the stem of the plant, either to drink in the foggy moisture that might be present within that particular environment, or maybe sometimes those adventitious roots actually reach all the way to the ground, like the hollow roots.
I thought of hollow right away to almost stabilize the plant on a steep slope.
Exactly. Or sometimes to gain extra nutrients as well. So plant cells have this ability to differentiate from each other. There are certain primordial cells that can sort of reprogram themselves to become roots, even though it used to be stem material.
And as we talked about last week, plant cells are undifferentiated, which means they can go in any direction, and it really depends on what hormones are applied that can make them go in a different direction. So in terms of comparing it to the human body, this would be like stem cells in a way, where they're undifferentiated. And I find that really fascinating, actually, that there's a whole plant hiding inside each plant cell, really, is what's happening.
It's amazing.
And, very, very interesting stuff.
Quite a miracle, really. So how would we do this? Or shall we talk about the species first?
Well, let's say there's several different kinds of cuttings. Yes. Firstly, there's root cuttings. Mm-hmm. And maybe we want to give some examples as we go along. Root cuttings, what comes to mind for me right away is comfrey. We spoke about this a few weeks ago that, you know, you can just take a little piece of that rubbery root, and in time, maybe a few weeks' time, it will grow a little shoot of mm-hmm. leaves out of it. It's really fascinating to me.
Yes.
So that's an example of a root cutting. Another classic example of a root cutting that I can think of is the breadfruit tree. We know how they make basically small sucker plants that are coming off of the long roots that are coming out of the side of the main tree.
Especially when they're wounded. And the suckering and growth of either roots or a stem can be a response to wounding, depending on the species. And that would be an example.
Yeah, I would believe that. And so that to me is a classic example. And there mm-hmm. are great techniques for retrieving a breadfruit sucker, which we can go into details on a little bit later, perhaps.
And as well, there are leaf cuttings that we can do. And I didn't really prepare, but I too many examples. But if anybody's ever seen the air plant, the mother of thousands,
the mother plant,
amazing that these little scalloped edges is a bud, and essentially any small piece of this plant, when laid in a moist environment like the forest floor, will generate a small plant that just pops right out of there.
Sure, those gorgeous succulents, the echeveria relatives, I actually really get a kick out of that. The same deal, if a leaf breaks off of the stem right at the point of contact where the leaf used to be connected to the stem, a whole little plant will grow.
Wow.
And root in out of just a single leaf. And it's something I like to share with my younger friends, children. They just love watching a little plant get born off of a single leaf. Very cool.
In most cases, though, we'll be looking at stem cuttings. It seems that that's much more traditional or more when we're thinking about vegetative propagation, we really need to match it to the particular type of plant. So what I'm trying to say is most of the plants that we would choose to grow from cuttings would be grown from the stem portion.
Stem cuttings, that's right. And there's several different kinds of stem cuttings. And there would be hardwood cuttings. There'd be semi-hardwood cuttings. And then there would be softwood cuttings. And depending on the mother plant, you would choose a different type of wood to be trying to root your plant from.
So there you just go to your research, you talk to other people who are knowledgeable, or you go to the internet where people are knowledgeable and you can do the research on your plant specifically. You want to study that. You want to become familiar with the growth cycles of the plant as well. When is this plant when are the stems dormant? When are the buds on the stems dormant? When are they growing? When are they maybe about to pop? We can see a color change in buds from the maybe the grayish or the copperish color of the stem starting to green out, and we can see that these buds are about to break.
That's right. That's right. One that I think of right away that I've just had such a hard time propagating from cuttings myself is figs. Now, figs are a perfect example of that, really. You can start to see the bud forming, and I don't know if I've... The interesting thing is it's the species of plant and how it likes to be propagated, basically, and then the timing it out with the bud. And then later in the show, we'll talk a little bit about rooting hormones, which can be used to inspire rooting to happen from our cuttings. But I found it very difficult. I believe that figs would come into the semi-hardwood category, and it's the hardwood cuttings and the semi-hardwood cuttings that I've certainly had the most difficulty with. Right. I've certainly not mastered it.
Right. We were talking just before the show about the value, if there could be one at some point, about a cutting calendar or a propagation calendar, but Robin, you shared one of the challenges. I went, aha, of course.
Yeah, the weather changes constantly. You just never know when the plants are going to bud out. Maybe in the not so distant past, things were a little bit more regimented or consistent in timing, but certainly it seems to me that the timing of everything has changed and shifted a whole lot.
And combine that with the many microclimates found in the Hawaiian Islands, and you really just have to pay attention to what's happening that year. Be ready and come to know the cycles of your plants, essentially.
Yeah, observation, as always, is key. So let's talk about a little bit of the different woody cuttings, some plant names that would fall into those categories.
Sure. So, gosh, my list doesn't specify in terms of hardwood, softwood, et cetera.
Okay, well, I'm
so,
sure we can
but
discern.
If we started with soft, we could go Ualla sweet potato as a classic example.
That's right.
Yeah, so now here's a plant that getting the observation of new growth. So you have a really vigorously growing new stem rather than the old growth. That's kind of become more woody. You want that newer growth, not too young and tender, but vigorous growth on the stem, and taking a cutting about the length of your arm, squeezing it all the way down that stem to make sure that there aren't any burrowing insects inside. If you feel a hollow spot, you have to discard that cutting, or if it's near enough to the end of the cutting, the basal end of the cutting, you can just tweak that part off. You'll remove most of the leaves up the stem and leave just a few of the leaves at the meristem.
That's right, which is an extremely important part of doing that, because the leaves will tend to desiccate. They'll drain the stem of any moisture that it's holding once they start to get limp. So best really in general with cuttings is to take the larger leaves off, just leave the smallest new leaves intact, and they won't be draining the cutting.
And it's often recommended to reduce even the foliage at the tip of the cutting by cutting some of the leaves in half as well.
Mm-hmm. And also with Ualla, we like to let them cure off too, correct? Kind of do them a day ahead of time and keep them in the shade, not in a bucket of water necessarily.
Yes.
Correct?
That can be helpful, yes. Mm-hmm. And then we're planting it out in the sun, but many cuttings actually want to be in a shady environment because we're cutting them off from the root system, so we need to make sure that we keep them in a humid environment. Now, of course, here we create humid environments and we create fungal issues and problems. So if we're putting these into a media or a potting mix, if you will, for rooting, it needs to be extraordinarily well drained, and oftentimes people just use 100% perlite or cinder as an example of the most well drained media, essentially, so that we've got lots of oxygen in there and it doesn't encourage that fungal or bacterial growth that would be unbeneficial. And then a mist house can be also very helpful or sometimes essential depending on the species.
That's right.
If you don't have that, sometimes you can just get by if you're around, and it's if you're nearby enough, you can mist with just a hand sprayer. keep them missed, keep them out of the direct sunlight. And again, with your research, you'll have a good idea about how many days or weeks it may take to generate roots. And your hand might be pretty tired with that hand sprayer after a while. Figure out a mist system if it's very beneficial. And then we also want to think about using rooting hormones potentially. Could be very important. And we're going to cover that a little bit later in the show. So we'll skip over that particular one for now. But just to give you a bit of a list of things that we do grow from cuttings here, Ava, Uala, rosemary and other Mediterranean herbs, miracle fruit, fig, Gloricidia, pineapple, mulberry, pomegranate, sugarcane, cassava, hibiscus, feijoa, dragon fruit, and our beautiful and beloved tea plant as well. One last thing before Robin gets into another one of the details about a particular cutting as an example. If you could share about the rosemary, Robin. But we do want to say you want to remove any flowers or fruits that may be present on the stem. It may actually not even be the best cutting if it even has flowers or fruits, but if you see them developing, you certainly want to pinch those off at the earliest possibility so that the cutting is not expending any energy into their further development when it really should be focusing on roots, rooting out.
That's right. That's right. Well, with the Mediterranean herbs, I have learned over time, and well, no pun intended, over time. No, a good friend, Michael Wise, taught me, because I was just having terrible luck, you know, taking big rosemary cuttings, tall ones, 12 inch or something like that, and they just weren't going. And he told me to take pretty much about the top 4 inches. So what we're getting is semi-soft wood, not the newest growth and not the hardest wood down below, but semi-soft wood seems to really do the trick.
Yep.
Now, in general, I prefer to grow plants from seed because I think they're stronger plants somehow. However, rosemary seeds are so resistant to germinating. I mean, it's just something you could try and try and try, and they just really don't like to germinate. So cuttings is the way to go with that particular plant. And I basically just take them a bucket of water out there to my rosemary bush if I'm going to do a bunch of cuttings. And as soon as I cut it, I put it in the bucket of water so it stays nice and hydrated. Mm-hmm. It always helps to strip off some of the lower leaves carefully and just plunk it into a pretty basic potting mix. I'm not using perlite or cinders in there. I found that a basic potting mix. Of course, I haven't had much luck with my cuttings all winter long. I think the really wet weather, you know, back in the fall, it just has not been conducive. I'm getting a lot of dampening off. So I clearly have something to learn when it comes to cuttings. I'm hoping this conversation right here will improve my skills.
Have you ever tried submerging your cuttings in some kind of fungicide?
No, I haven't even been using rooting hormones, actually, which would probably be where I would start, just to get those roots going right away. And
right.
We'll talk a little bit more before the show's over about how rooting hormones work. But there's one other cutting plant that I don't want to skip over, and that's begonias. Begonias are so beautiful. They're typically grown from cuttings. I think a lot of people are familiar with the angel wing begonias. Sometimes they have polka dots on the leaves. They're just lovely. Mm-hmm. And those are a great example. And edible flowers. It's a great example of a really difficult plant to propagate, actually. Although you may have had great luck without knowing anything, I learned that they will not root from a node that had a flower on it. So if you notice, the flower shoots come out every third node or so. Mm-hmm. You want to pay particular attention when you're taking your cutting that node that's going to go down into the soil wasn't a flowering node. Mm-hmm. And I learned that from an internet search some years ago because I was really hot on begonias and wanting to propagate them a lot, and I was having really mixed results. And so that's just an example to me of how each particular plant has its own methodology, and that's why it really does pay to do a little bit of research ahead of time and learn what that plant is going to take so you can do that and not just fail like I have.
I'm glad you mentioned the length of the stem too, because I know that's a mistake that's often made and that I've made is it seems like, oh, well, if my cutting is bigger, it's going to have more, oh, it's got more nodes, it's going to be more likely to leaf out, to root out. But once we get over, in general, 5 inches at the most, it is a detriment to the cutting. In many cases, unless it's one of those really easy ones, like you can, you know, have a Gloricidia cutting that's 10 feet long and stick it in the ground. But
Sure. I think it's all about the movement of sap through the plant, is that when there's no roots, the sap can only flow so far, and you end up losing a top half of your cutting. And, of course, that's the growing point, so that's not the part you really want to lose.
Right. And the hormones actually need to move as well in through the cutting to establish that adventitious root system, which would be another reason, you say, of the movement of chemicals as well.
Right. Okay, well, that's such a fascinating topic of cuttings, but we really should keep cruising along to other methods, and it's layering is next. Now, there's air layering and ground layering. I'll start with ground layering is... sometimes you've seen the plant do it all by itself without you even participating. And I think of that beautiful Pohinahina, is it? The Vitex.
Vitex rotundifolia.
Yeah,
the native one.
Uh-huh. That's a long trailing woody plant. And where the woody vine hits the soil, often it will make roots all by itself as it travels, roots beyond the main root system of the plant.
Right. A really great way of propagating AVA as well, and it will happen naturally too. Mm-hmm. But while stem cuttings are trickier, doing a ground layer of AVA is a very easy way to establish a new plant, and we'll see it just happen spontaneously as well. So again, we're looking for that adventitious growth of the stem, but it happens before the stem is removed from the mother plant. And why? Because it's necessary. So we're going from easy to hard, and we're just basically trying to propagate, and we'll go through the least amount of effort, but with air layering, we're doing it with species or varieties that if we just took a straight cutting before it rooted, it would probably fail.
Correct.
The method.
And so we can induce ground layering as well. And I'll just quickly describe how One Song has done that with kale plants, with a multi-branched kale plant. Cuttings just weren't happening. So what they figured out was to take about a 1 gallon pot full with soil and cut a little part of the side of the pot out and lean the kale stem into that pot of soil so that the stem was touching the media, the soil that was in the pot, and that inspired the plant to make some adventitious roots of all its own and started to root out into the pot. And then when it felt well rooted enough, it was simply clipped away from the mother, and now you've got another kale plant.
Very cool.
I think that's a really fascinating way to do it.
Super fun. So some species and varieties that we would use the layering technique, Puakenikeni, which Robin reminded us takes a very long time, more than a decade, to go to flower, which is the preferred quality of that plant, if you grow it from seed. However, if you grow it from an air layer, you'll have it in just a couple years, maybe.
That's right. So guaranteed, any nursery plants that you have purchased out there of Puakenikeni, guaranteed they were air layered.
Right.
Yeah.
Or hopefully they were.
Yeah.
Other examples, Jabodicaba, delicious grape-like tree, the longan and the lychee, mountain apple, Chico sapodilla, the beautiful cinnamon-flavored fruits. Star apple is often air-layered. Caimito is another name for that one. The tamarind and breadfruit can even be air-layered as well. Oh, Robin's just pulled a Chico out of her bag.
I know, they're going off right now.
How delightful. So I wanted to use lychee as an example, and thanks to UH CTAR, the College of Tropical Agriculture, for this information. There are many fine information sheets available on the Internet. So from doing the research, the time to air layer a lychee is when the leaves of the previous growth flush have matured. Can't say a time of year. It's totally dependent on your particular location. And lychee will have this cycle even several times in a given year. you want to take a quarter inch or larger diameter. You want to select a quarter inch or larger diameter stem with a strong main leader. You're going to remove 1 inch of a ring of the bark, an inch long on the stem. You're going to leave it exposed for several weeks until the callus tissue develops after you have scratched off the cambium. I've neglected to mention that. Oftentimes, lychee, if you do the air layer right away, it'll just heal over and you'll never get the root formation. But then eventually you'll pack it with an inch thick of sphagnum moss all the way around this wounded portion, 4 inches long. And again, a reminder that the part you've removed is just 1 inch. So it's going to be hanging over the other sides, and that'll all fill up with roots in 2 to 4 months. If you use clear plastic over the sphagnum moss, the moist sphagnum moss, it keeps the moisture inside, and if you use clear plastic, you can see the roots developing. So that's the benefit there. And just as a final thing, budding, which is actually a grafting technique, which we'll get to finally here, is said to produce trees with a better root system if it is grafted onto a seedling lychee, which we don't want to have for the fruit production. But if we have challenging soil conditions, budding of a lychee, although not the common method of propagation, would produce an even stronger plant.
Yeah, interesting. That's just to kind of segue into grafting. Often that's why grafting is chosen, is because you would use a rootstock that had some disease resistance going for itself. It's why citrus are generally grafted and not air layered, because citrus, there are quite a few diseases that can be really fatal to citrus. And what's often done in the industry of grafting is that a really highly resistant rootstock is used, and therefore you end up with a stronger plant in the long run. That is the one thing about cuttings in general. If we're growing big trees from cuttings, you're going to get a radial root system from around the node, which in weather and storms is not as able to keep that tree upright as a taproot, which will hold a tree up in harder weather. So over the long term, sometimes it's our only choice and we'll go with cuttings for that reason. But if it can be grafted, I think besides the disease resistance, also just the sturdiness of the tree in the long term.
Right. Beautiful. So yes, moving finally into grafting, this is the union of two or more plants with favorable qualities. Robin mentioned the quality of the rootstock and its strength. And then what we're thinking even more about that when we're admiring this plant is what's called the scion, which is the what gets plugged on top of the rootstock that develops into the vegetative and then eventually the flowering and the fruiting portion of the tree. And this was actually, for any given named variety, it's a clone of one particular unique genetic individual that probably arose from either of intentional cross-pollination or maybe
mutation.
A mutation, or maybe it was just a spontaneous seed where somebody tasted that fruit or smelled that flower and said, fantastic, this is the one, let's make thousands of them.
Sure.
And so we just keep going back to these varieties for their qualities that we desire. So grafting being the most difficult of the vegetative propagation methods, except for perhaps micropropagation, which we talked about last week, we're going to do this when all the other methods fail, because it is really exacting. It takes a lot of skill, it takes a lot of finesse, and it takes a lot of practice to do this right. There are multitude of different grafting techniques that are done, and we keep talking about them here on the Garden Show without actually getting a whole lot of hard and fast experience, perhaps. But I'm looking forward in my later years, in my retired age years, I think I will become a grafting expert if I still can find it in me to do so. Some of the species and varieties that are often grafted because other vegetative propagation methods are not successful would be atamoya. Avocado, successful from air layers, but again, better from that disease and strength resistance that Robin talked about. Cherimoya and its relatives. Citrus, again, because of the strength given from the rootstock. Loquat, Mac nuts, although grown from seed, there are named varieties. Mango would be a classic example. The different sapotes, white sapote specifically, jackfruit, rambutan, and starfruit are many of the classic subtropical fruit varieties that are grafted.
All right. Well, yay for vegetative propagation. Certainly lots of plants that take to that really well. And before the show's out, we kind of want to give a little shout out to rooting hormones. You may have heard of the, you know, the name brand Rutone. There's Dip and Grow. There's Olivia's cloning gel. I don't know. There's a lot of different kinds out there. But essentially, they have auxins. Auxin is the rooting hormone for plant. There's a few of them. There's a few different kinds of auxins. I don't know if I should get into the specific chemical names. I suppose I will. At least indole acetic acid is one of them, IAA. Rooting hormones come in powders and quick dip solutions, even sprays that can be applied to the whole plant and the foliage, mm-hmm. which is a way for them to move through the entire plant.
Or sometimes submerging the cutting in a solution, I read, is also very effective.
That's correct. And so I'll just read a little quote from the rooting hormone website that I thought was really brilliant. And the most effective chemical to use varies and can be more important than the concentration levels of whatever that chemical is. So a combination of the concentration and the choice of chemical, plus the type of cutting and the time of the year, is going to determine the effectiveness of any of these rooting hormones. So really, it's not just the product. And it's not just the concentration of the product,
yep.
but it's the kind of cutting and the time of year that you choose to do it is going to all add up to how effective it really is.
Right. One of the things I took away, too, from doing the research was that these are perishable products. And it seems like for all the years that I've had maybe a bottle of Rutone or whatever, it's because somebody gave it to me because they thought maybe they'd use it and they never got around to it. And who knows how long this has been sitting in somebody's car. Some of these rooting hormones are sensitive to temperature and light. And so if we want to be serious about getting the results that we would desire, it's probably a good idea to get some fresh stuff and then to keep it well. Just as we would keep our seeds well so that we can ensure their viability, we want to keep these rooting hormones in a good condition in the refrigerator in many cases.
And then another bit that I thought was of note was a permaculture website that offered a homemade rooting hormone recipe, and that came from soaking willow stems, which, you know, you'd walk around a long time in Hawaii looking for willow stems, probably come up empty-handed. The best I can, I've done it myself, is sometimes the flower shops have pussy willows. And I've actually tried to root them because I always had a dream of growing them. They're some of my favorite little buds, of course. But just soaking those in water will yield you an auxin. Willows are very high in root auxins, and it will transfer them to the water, and you can use them to water in your cuttings. Use that water, and that will deliver you a fair amount of rooting hormone. Mm. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Beautiful. So one last thing on that, for more information, if you want to get really technical, you can have a visit to rooting-hormones.com. Lots of really geeky technical information on rooting hormones there. I'm looking forward to dipping into that when time allows. Just time for a few announcements to finish off. We've got a couple of ag-related events coming up this weekend. Introduction to beekeeping class with Jimmy Trujillo at Kauai Community College starting up this Saturday. To register more information, 245-8318. There's also a 5-week gardening certificate training program happening at Kanui Kapono Charter School. Thanks to Malama Kauai. You can go to malamakauai.org or call 828-0685 for that information. And if you want to have your ag-related event or announcement shared on air, please email it a couple of weeks in advance to us at inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. Or if you just want to shout out and say howdy to us, we'd love to hear from you. To hear previous broadcasts of the show, to go to kkcr.org. Click the audio archive tab at the top of the page. We'd like to thank the other members of our In the Garden on the Farm team. First and foremost, our engineer, Jack, who gets a lot of these shows together for us so you can hear them. Thank you so much, Jack. as well our phone tech Mac, our webmaster Laura Christine, and our station manager Dean. Thanks, you guys. This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts Paul and Robin. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha.
Aloha.